How do I define leadership?
Confidence without ego.
I never expected things to happen if you didn't work every single day at them.
Hi, podcast listeners. I'm Lillian Cunningham, the editor of On Leadership at The Washington Post. Each week, we talk to influential people about their lives and careers and the lessons they learned along the way. This week's podcast is with Christian Rutter. He's the president and one of the co-founders of the online dating site OkCupid. He also recently published the book Dataclism, which is based on some of the most interesting data from OkCupid's site. So I'm curious, what was the most interesting insight that you took away?
Sure. I mean, definitely the thing that surprised me the most, because it was from a data set that I'm way less familiar with, was this finding by these guys who are working with Facebook likes, you know, the articles and albums and things that you've clicked on. And just from that, you know, they can predict your race with like 95% accuracy, your gender with 88% accuracy, your orientation with 85% accuracy, all the way down to like 60%. They could guess whether your parents got divorced before you were 21, which is like a pretty, like, that's not a demographic detail. That's just like a thing that happened to you in the past, you know, and that's like a pretty intense, intense level of accuracy. To think where, what those guys' accuracies will be in like 3 or 4 years or 5 or 10 years of likes, it will be intense on very like minute topics, you know.
What about anything that you feel like you've learned about human behavior from looking at some of the data from OkCupid?
That's the thing. I mean, nothing on OkCupid surprises me anymore. And the more, I think I've talked about this with other people who work with big data. You know, the more time you spend with it, the more it confirms your kind of cynical intuition about people. This most kind of sensational thing is the age. The way men and women in a straight dating case look at age so differently. Women want a guy to be roughly as old as they are, so a 30-year-old woman wants a 30-year-old guy, 40, and so forth. But guys, pretty much, when you just look at how they're attracted to people, it's just a straight ticket vote for the youngest possible age in the data set, which is 20. Like 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30, 20, they all think 20-year-olds are the hottest, which, of course, is no surprise, but it's still weird to be able to see it with that level of clarity and precision.
I know I read recently about how eHarmony is going to start a sort of matchmaking service for employers and job seekers. Is that something that you ever thought about or are thinking about?
That idea comes up because there's lots of places where sort of interpersonal compatibility seems like a relevant thing, whether it's roommates or employers or mentors. I've heard this brought up in all these contexts. And we've always rejected it because I think you're going to have a really hard time getting high quality data from people. Like, it's one thing to be offering your opinions on life just very broadly with the end goal of finding someone to share your life with, or even finding someone to go sleep with or whatever. Whereas like HR comes to you and is like, here, fill out this thing. You're just like, I mean, I can't imagine lessons. I mean, you will do it because you'll get fired or whatever, but the incentives to be truthful and really project yourself into the data is going to be pretty slim. People are going to be guarded. I'm highly skeptical, let me put it that way, because you're just not going to get people to put themselves out there in the same way.
Is it true that neither you or any of the other co-founders have ever gone on an online date?
Yeah, that's true, I think, to my knowledge at least. Yeah, I never have.
So I'm curious, even just in terms of like customer research, did you never think it was important to just have the experience of what someone who's on a site like OkCupid goes through when they use your service?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it wouldn't be useful for sure. But at the same time, we had all been on dates. You know, like I think the dates that arise online aren't really that much different than the dates that arise because you're talking to somebody at a party and you agree to go get dinner or whatever. I don't know that there's a lot of difference, especially these days. Like the distance, if you want to think metaphorically, between people starting to talk on OkCupid and exchanging a few messages and then actually going out and getting a cup of coffee or a beer is very short. It's not this like protracted, you know, 20 messages with tons of backstory and biography and love, and there's not a lot of romance on OkCupid per se, you know. That all happens afterwards, just like it does it all happens in real life. We spend a lot of time looking and thinking about the interface, for sure. We just don't ever actually go out on dates with people. So, you know, I mean, and that's another place where metrics are invaluable. You know, we can look at, you can have an intuition about how people are going to use a page or a service or whatever you want to call it, but it's often its effectiveness or people's willingness to use it's very hard to guess those things in advance. So we launch and test things and people use it or they don't, and we keep it or we don't, and we kind of move on. So that's like the audience, so to speak, sort of guides us a lot.
So one thing I was hoping that you could share is the worst date that you've ever been on and something that you learned from it?
I mean, when I was like 15 or 16, I went on some really, I mean, I don't even know if there were dates. I wouldn't say that there was like a lot of, they weren't highly sexualized, let me say this. So, you know, you would go like get a burger and our parents would drive us and then we would just kind of sit there like this and then we would sit there like this in the back of the car and be like, okay, see you at school. And that would be the end of that, you know? So, I mean, those are 100% the most awkward for sure. I personally have never been the kind of guy to like go up and just like ask somebody out. A couple of my other founding partners are more like that. So I've never really been on that many like just like ice cold dates. They're always like friends first or this kind of deal, you know? So I think thinking back on the past of online dating, it was, I think, laden/plagued with the expectations of finding your soulmate. You know, like Hermione's entire existence is like predicated on that, you know, and you're gonna really find the one, you're gonna like, it's gonna sort the crazy world out for you here with this algorithm, you know. And we kind of like rejected that with the way we were making OkCupid. And I think from my perspective, my biggest enthusiasm for doing that was like, you know, I met my wife when we were both like dating other people in like 99, like her boyfriend's band was playing and my band and we play, you know, we like got to know each other and then she went to go do something else and I went to go do something else and my roommate ran into her randomly in New York City like 3 years later and so we reconnected and then we eventually started dating, you know, and like that to me, you know, it's just like there's so much randomness in love, you know, and there's so much that kind of story isn't something that like an algorithm couldn't really predict or that like this one person that I met and talked to 5 years ago, or I guess, you know, 7 years later, I marry this person, and like that's just such an insanely hard thing to like fold into a computer. And like, we really tried to keep it to get people out and meet in person. You know, somebody's laugh, their pictures, their profile could be amazing, and they could have the most obnoxious laugh in the world. You know, or like the sweater is ugly, or the sweater is amazing, or whatever. You know, like there's so much about people that you just can't get until you're actually sitting down with them, their tone of voice. You know. And those things can be amazing or they can be totally horrible and computers don't get that, you know? And so we try to really recognize the limits of what we could do as a dating site. And for me, part of that was because like, I've never really been that good at like planning out my own life anyway in general, but certainly not like my love life, you know? It's just been a thing that kind of happened miraculously or whatever you want to call it. And so we tried to recognize and sort of like bow before the power of serendipity in romance as when we designed the site.
Is there, could you think of any specific way in which you've had to remind yourself of that in business?
Well, I mean, we always have built OkCupid to be very like open, where it's kind of you as a user can sort of, you create your own algorithm essentially, or you feed your stuff into our algorithm, which then becomes yours to find someone. But it's definitely that mindset, kind of recognizing your limitations is also built into how we run OkCupid because we don't advertise. So like, you know, it's often we don't have any spend to grow the site or we don't put any spend against growing the site. So it's, you know, we see our numbers every month and they're good, you know, so far, but who knows what's going to happen next month. And we try to run the best site that we can run, but we don't do, I mean, and we do projections obviously based on what has happened in the past, but it's really just kind of, there's more of a, It is an oddly fatalistic process, like doing our forecast, because we see what's happening and it's totally fine, but it's not like we're going to be running a Super Bowl ad or something. So we know that that's going to drive traffic, and we don't know that, you know, we're going to be on Oprah, and so that's going to make we're going to get all these registrations that day, and you know, you wake up every morning and you check the stats, and one day you could wake up and they could be 20% off, and that just could be the new reality, you know. And running OkCupid, you're just kind of like, we're going to do the best job with what comes to us, but it is an oddly passive type of experience sometimes.
So is it fair to say like the connection you're making is that there's sort of a serendipity to the way you run the business in the
Sure.
same way there's...
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of work and very intelligent decisions hopefully get made with what we can see. But we just don't, just like with, you know, how you can't capture someone's laugh in an algorithm, we recognize the limits of what we can know as we're running the business and can't and don't worry about what we don't know.
What do you think is one of the most interesting or significant trends in this online dating industry?
The dating industry?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I think Tinder is an amazing product, and it seems to have been sort of catalytic for OkCupid. Like, this is the best year that we've ever had, and it's also, you know, their second kind of most robust year. And But I think they brought a lot of people in, and I think to online dating in general, or kind of like smashed that last stone in the wall of taboo that used to be around it, you know? So now it's just part of the thing. I think everybody who's like under 30, more or less, is on one of these services or at least thought about it, you know? But I think what could happen, and what I think a site like OkCupid has to stay ahead of, is like, okay, so these people who kind of came into dating or came into online dating expecting that this is what a dating product is. It's very photo-based. There's no profile. It's super fast, super light, super chatty. How do we sort of conform and react to that and make sure that those people, when they're ready to do OkCupid, find the site is intuitive and as sort of welcoming as Tinder is for in that first like 15 seconds of downloading it, you know? So, and I think a lot of sites are going to have to answer that question for themselves. Like, how do sites accommodate people who are used to just very, very lightweight apps?
So do you think in, say, 10 years, the way that we date and meet people will be more or less what it is now? We'll just have better interfaces on these sorts of sites?
I kind of think so. I mean, you know, like, sex and romance existed way, 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 way before computers, you know? It's a weird business because it's so closely tied to the real world, unlike even Facebook, which is like, you know, you know these people, some of them, but you don't necessarily ever have to meet them, or like it's your Facebook existence can just totally stay on Facebook, whereas you can't really be an OkCupid user until you're ready to actually go out and meet people from OkCupid. So I think that it's I'm sure there will be some kind of innovation, of course, you know, and the things will get better and all that, but I don't know that it will be fundamentally different. I mean, I think the idea that you'll have a watch with your dating profile on it and it will like send it to all these other people, I just don't know if people will get on board with that, like walk into a bar and have your thing broadcast everywhere.
Match.com bought OkCupid in 2011.
Yep, that's right, January.
For like $50 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just a blunt question.
Yeah,
what is it like to be young, and if you wanted to, you could probably not work for the rest of your life?
Maybe New York is expensive, but yeah, I mean, probably. That's a hard question to answer. Definitely my life isn't any different. Let me put it this way. It'll probably be very different in maybe 10 years. My life in 10 years will be different because of what happened in 2011. My life right now maybe is not, if that makes sense, because I'm still in it. I'm still working at OkCupid. I have the same friends. I live in the same apartment. I have almost the same clothes. You know, it's the same thing, basically. So. But of course, it's going to open up paths that I don't know what they're even going to look like later.
I'm curious if you think of yourself as an entrepreneur. Like, some people come in here and they describe themselves as they love starting things. They don't necessarily then, like, once it's really up and running, they don't really like maintaining it.
Yeah.
Other people, you know, it's like their baby and they want to stay with it forever.
Sure. Yeah. I'm definitely not really an entrepreneur in the sense that, like, I can't wait to get done with OkCupid so I can go start my new business, you know, or something. And also, to be totally clear, like the three other guys that started OkCupid with me built the business, basically. You know, I run it now, but I started running it after we had already been around for 7 years, and that success of it in that 7 years is almost totally due to them. So, you know, I'll probably do something totally different. I'm very a project-oriented person, and I like to get things done and like complete them, and I've done like a very wide and somewhat random assortment of things in my life, and this is another one of them. And I probably hopefully will work with those guys from OkCupid again, but that's just something about the entrepreneur title. It's like, it just doesn't seem like a thing to me personally. It just seems like, because it just says that you're starting businesses. It doesn't say anything about how good the businesses are or how successful or any of this stuff, and you'll meet people who started like they're on their like 10th company.
The last thing I want to ask is just about personality quizzes. Do you have any like general thoughts on personality quizzes and why people seem to love them so much?
I know. I mean, that's how we OkCupid and SparkNotes before it kind of got off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
People just love to hear about themselves. I mean, even now, in different ways, OkCupid serves that need. You know, we that's how we make money, is by you can subscribe and you can find out who's voted on you and who's visited your profile, and it's all these little tokens that sort of gratify your ego a little bit. And these things are the same way. You get your result and you're like, oh, I knew it, that's exactly right, I am just like this, or and that's why I have that flaw or that strength, you know. So I think it's just there's so much ego gratification drives so much of the world, I think. And it's a big part of why those tests are popular.
Can you think of like any personal value you hold?
Your work ethic? I hate being told what to do, sometimes in a childish and counterproductive way. Although I'm always willing to listen to advice, but I try to give my employees the same leash. And you're not just a pair of hands, you know, with me coming up with all the ideas or the plan or whatever it is. So like I really try to give people, I'm like the opposite of a micromanager, sometimes to a fault, but that is definitely a reaction of me. Like when I was in high school, I just like, I hated doing homework because it was just like an assignment. It seemed so pointless. And so I'd often try to get my teachers to like make deals with me where if I did well on the test, they would basically like make the homework irrelevant in my grade, which usually worked. But I remember at the end of senior year, this is so stupid to look back on it, but me and my best friend Jed, who later actually went on to like, he started Mt. Gox, the big Bitcoin exchange that kind of blew apart. We like literally high-fived because someone had told us, I don't know who this liar was, that there was no homework in college. So we thought we were totally done with homework, and we like high-fived. We were like, sweet, we made it through. Now on to the world with no homework. And of course, you know, my first day of class, they're like giving out problem sets. They're like, yeah, this is due next Friday. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I felt so betrayed. But anyway, yeah, so that kind of mindset, I try to extend the same sort of latitude that I would expect myself to anybody that works with me.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and stay tuned for a new conversation next week. You can also go to washingtonpost.com/leadership to watch our videos and read more stories.